Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
This week on the PR Moment podcast, we're taking another change of tack. We're talking about virtual agencies with Tamara Littleton, CEO and founder of The Social Element. Now, it seems to me there are quite a few virtual agencies around, but not that many have managed to scale to the size of The Social Element. It's, for those of you that don't know, it's a 300 people, 100 staff, about 200 freelancers, £9 million virtual consultancy business operating internationally, and I think I'm right in saying mainly in the UK, Europe and the US. I should say at this point, thanks so much as ever to our PRM's podcast sponsors, the PRCA. And don't forget, we've got our social purpose event coming up in April, so do check out the homepage of the PRM.com for more details on that. Tamara, welcome to PRM podcast.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
Now, in case some of our readers are not familiar with The Social Element, just tell me a little bit about the business, its structure and the type of work you do.
Yeah, of course. So it's the Social Element. Big thing that we like to do is we help brands have a genuine human connection with their consumers. So what that actually means is that we do a lot of work with brands around, say, engagement. So we are the voice of the brand talking back to consumers on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. We also do, we're very much consultancy led. So we always start with perhaps their social media strategy. And also doing creative campaigns. So we're just obsessed with social, right. And we're obsessed with human behaviour on social.
Right. And when we say social, what do we're talking organic and paid,
yep.
Is that right? And just with my fairly broad brush knowledge of social these days, the paid is more significant in terms of the volume of stuff that you do than organic?
Yes, correct. I think okay. We've been advising for a number of years that, you have to sort of pay to play. But there's also some organic content that we still do. We call it, keeping the lights on for brands. What you don't want to have is sort of just empty content on the Instagram account. So we do that. And the engagement side is very different. It's very much kind of always on for brands. So we're getting back to people okay. in real time.
So there's a bit of customer service.
Yep.
There's a bit of paid in
yes.
terms of promotion. And there's a bit of organic. And that's
yes.
sort of the sort of three broad threads of the business, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, I call it the three C's. There's creative, okay. consultancy and communications.
Okay.
And within communications, we also do a lot of crisis prevention, perhaps preparing brands for making sure they're ready. And sometimes we've helped them go through it as well, because obviously people do weird stuff and we're looking after the brand. So right. it's a bit of a kind of a mixture of everything.
Okay. So I just want to talk, the bit I'm really interested in is, in addition to that, is the structure.
Yeah.
Because we're going to talk about that a lot in the next half hour or so. But what you've managed to do is, lots of people have the bright idea of doing a virtual agency, and there's a number of advantages of that, which we'll come on to.
Mm.
But what you've managed to do is scale it in a
yes.
way that I haven't seen before.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Yeah.
I think it was one of those things that the structure, there is, when I started it, so it was actually 2002. It's going to be 18 this year, which is very, very exciting. When I actually started it, I started it with a remote team right from the beginning, and I think that had a big impact
right.
on how we've managed to scale it. Just for absolute clarity, we do now have one office in London, and there's about 20 of us go into that office on a regular basis,
right.
but it's still flexible. I go in a few days a week kind of thing. So that model works really well. It's almost like that's a hub in
right.
London. But, everybody else, so 300 people all working around the world, a lot of people in America, across Europe. I have people over in Australia.
Right.
It's all over the place.
And we'll come on to the detail, but let me just work it out. It's about 100, no one's going to test you on it, about 100 full-time.
Yes. And the rest.
And they're all virtual, albeit with a smallish hub in London.
Yep.
Another 200 odd freelancers.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? Are they some of them doing a couple of hours a week, or are they?
Yeah, it's flexible hours.
All over the shop.
It's
okay.
flexible hours. They are doing things like the engagement services, so they're actually engaging on behalf of the clients.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what I was going to say. So the bearing in mind the fairly broad base of social media work that is required now, you sort of, all those people have different areas of specialism.
Yes.
Is that kind of how it works? Right.
Yeah, and it doesn't look too different from other agencies. It's just, you know, we have this flexible working model. So we have, you know, the account team, the commercial side. Right. We have people doing delivery. So we have strategists, we have creatives, we have these engagement specialists.
Right.
And then, you know, people, finance, all of that. It's really not very different. And I think when I founded it, I had the vision that I wanted it to be a big agency and I wanted it to be a global agency.
Right.
I was very kind of ambitious from the start. Over time, we sort of adapted and changed into a structure that probably looks very similar to other agencies.
Right, so I think that's the first sort of crucial thing, is that you don't see this as really, in terms of its structure or its organisation, as working particularly different than an agency where everyone comes into the office every day.
No, it's just our normal, I guess.
Right.
But yeah.
And I guess the key point there is identifying people who are comfortable in their own company, frankly, and then layering the technology and the organisation on top so that enables people to work in that virtual way.
Definitely.
So those are the key themes, really. So let's deal with the technology first, shall we? And again, I think the likes of me, who's less familiar with this stuff, is always looking for this eureka moment. I get the feeling there isn't one. But how do you create that community, and I suppose those internal channels, if you like, where you can share ideas and talk to each other and bounce stuff about?
I'm glad you used the word community, because that's the way I do see it. And I think, you know, we started off as very much a sort of community management agency. So it's like running the business like a community. So on the sort of the geeky, nerdy stuff, we use Google a lot. We use sort of Google Docs, and we use things like Zoom for our video conferences. We use Salesforce. We use Paprika. There are lots of sort of agency tools that we use. I love a good app. So, you know, we use things like Toggle for timekeeping. And there's some great ones for HR. There's one called Namely. So all of the tools we use, kind of great collaboration tools, things like MindMeister. So when you, obviously, people think about you go into an office, and if you want to do like a great, you know, brainstorming session, we've had to use different versions of that to sort of replicate that kind of behaviour.
Right.
But the technology in many ways is the easy part. Oh, we use Slack as well. So, you know, there's a lot of comms.
But what you're not doing really is you haven't gone to, I don't know, an Oracle or something like that. It's not one system you're using. You're using point solutions to do the various, where you've got a problem, use a tool to solve it, as opposed to trying to bring it all into one system.
Yeah, we've kind of, and again, because I started doing this back in 2002, there was a great tool at the time called Basecamp, which, you know, we're still using, but we've just moved over to something called Monday.com, which I adore because it's a lovely sort of visual project management
tool. I'm writing all
tool.
These down. I'm going to look at these afterwards. But yeah,
well, okay. The thing is, I get quite animated, quite excited about the technology, because I can actually run my entire agency on my mobile phone. So we have apps for everything. So and that's quite useful because I'm on the go quite a lot.
And I mean, I'm going to ask just because I'm interested. But Monday.com, what does that do?
So it's a
give us a paragraph on each of these. Go on.
Sure. So Monday.com is really for task tracking and project management, and it's very visual. You can kind of slide things over and mark them as done. It's all very color coordinated.
Okay.
Then you've got
Slack. I think most people are familiar with Slack, but just give us that's a sort of project management, really.
Using that for sharing research and ideas. So we use it to for marketing, actually. So people just dump loads of information in there about articles, and then we talk about it. So it's a bit more of a sort of group chat ideas. Very useful for the fact that people are in different time zones.
Okay.
And then I think the communication. This is the thing that I've realised over the years is a lot of it is about the communications. So we have like Google Chats. So instead of like grabbing someone and having a quick meeting, we often do sort of just chats that people can pick up again with different time zones. That's really useful. And then
So you'll have a chat going on about something.
Yeah.
And if people want to dial into that, they will join that they can.
Yeah, so right. So there might be like a client specific chat room.
Right.
Yeah, they're okay. Like little chat rooms, basically, right. Google Chat. And
what,
it means
what happens if you go there and no one else is there?
Yeah. Well, it's just this is one of the downsides which we can definitely pick up on, but people get a bit over reliant on text chat, which right. is why yeah, we started yeah. saying, do you know what, you have to do video calls as well.
And so, well, it's interesting. I've started doing that since you. Cause I think when we chatted,
yeah.
I was on the. I did a normal audio call, and you yeah. said, no, we must do it on the video. So
yeah,
now,
I'm quite militant
now
about now it.
Now, whenever I talk to my colleagues and things, we're doing video, and they're all slightly paranoid about it. But yeah. you get over it quickly, don't you?
You That's do. The, yeah, you yeah. do. And I think it's helped us amazingly because, you know, when you don't get that lovely human contact, to be able to at least see people on a video call, you pick up their body language. You can tell when someone is checking out a little bit and yeah. drifting off and doing emails yeah, as well. Yeah, yeah, so, yeah. you know, it's stopped. It's helped us be more present as a okay. team and connected.
Go on, we got sidetracked. Toggle, what does that do? Give us a...
That is a time management tool.
Okay, so timesheets.
Just timesheets,
okay.
yeah, yeah.
Salesforce, I think we know what that is.
Salesforce,
customer relationship.
CRM, yeah.
yeah fine. Namely?
Namely is an HR tool that okay. you can kind of track holidays and stuff, but fine. Again, it's very easy.
MindMeister?
MindMeister is a mind mapping software, which Ooh. I've got a feeling I use it more than other people in the team because I like visual mind maps.
Give me a bit more on
maps.
That. What do we mean, mind mapping?
So normally you'd kind of, if you were trying to, say, define a process, you might put a big... my map on a wall of, like, you know, A goes to B, and it's
oh,
for
like
creative
that.
Brainstorming.
I'm going to have a go on that.
But it's because it's online, you can literally seeing it move. So you're collaborating and creating a sort of, yes, it's for brainstorming, basically.
Okay.
It's cool.
Google Docs, I think we all get.
Yep.
I like Google Docs, but there's a whole bunch of people out there who don't like it at all, isn't
yeah,
it? But
yeah.
anyway, they find it a bit clunky. And then Zoom. Zoom is...
video, like yeah. Skype, sort
yeah,
of.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And which is, I mean, Google Hangout, Zoom, they're kind of
yeah,
fairly
much, or much
yeah,
less.
Fine. Right, so we went off on a massive tangent there, but I found that was good. Now, why did you decide to launch a virtual business with no offices? Was it a dollar thing?
Yeah, right.
yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I started the company with 10 grand investment from my parents, which they got back very handsome return from.
Well, they did. They have a bit, they got a bit of equity,
did they?
They
did. I bought them out, and they were right. really happy. And so, you know, starting a new company, I blew through that 10 grand pretty quickly, to
yeah.
be honest. So having an office was just a luxury.
It's interesting. My parents lent me 3.5 grand, so there you go. there's a story there.
It does.
Okay.
It does help.
It's worked out.
Yeah.
And
so I thought, okay, well, I can't afford an office, but I'd also, so I used to work at the BBC and a company called Cello. So this is back in like the late 90s, I was working in digital.
Right.
And at the BBC, I was running the webmaster team. So I was used to online forums, communities, and using chat at work because we had a internet relay chat at the BBC.
Amongst two? Chat journalists?
Well, we were chatting as a team, and then we had the tech team was in another part of the world. So it was...
You were just very comfortable
I was very
that.
Comfortable
you
with...
You understood the technology.
Yeah,
and,
I was yeah, comfortable right. with managing teams online. I was comfortable with people working from home. And actually, it was just a faster way to grow the company.
Yeah.
Using freelancers, they worked from home. It was very quick and easy. Then it became a bit of a USP for me as well because...
From a recruitment perspective or a client perspective?
From a recruitment point of view and the clients, it's an interesting one because it wasn't something I shouted about back in the day.
Well, I was going to... Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to come up because...
We can come back to that. Yeah. But, so being able to hire talent in different countries...
Right.
So it meant that I was able to scale faster because I didn't have to sink costs into offices.
Well, you don't have to... fiddle about getting an office, paying for an office. Yeah, it's just a whole, I don't know, presumably you've got 20% of your money, of your business that you can decide to reinvest or go on a holiday or whatever you want to do with it. Or presumably spend a bit more on tools, I don't know. So you did it originally because of, fair enough, financial reasons, but actually it kind of worked out, is what you're saying.
Yes.
But when you started, did you envisage getting an office or did you just not really think about it? I mean, I can't think why you would have been a big deal, really, but
yeah, I mean, it would have been nice to have an office.
Okay.
And I do remember because I was having to sort of, it's that classic thing, you know, you start a company and of course you're having to, the money just doesn't come rolling in immediately unless you're incredibly lucky. So I was also doing some project work at a big law firm. So sometimes I would meet people at their offices in reception, and then we'd go off to Starbucks or whatever. So, you know, I was able, and I did have a virtual office, so I could book meetings for clients.
Right.
So I was doing it that way at a time where that was quite a new thing.
Yeah. I mean, we're virtual, so it's never bothered us.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the advantages, which are
scale,
cost. You can move at speed,
attracting talent as well. Yeah, from anywhere.
And disadvantages, though, I mean, there must be a few, right?
Yeah, so it does come down to communication. I think I've realised over the years that you do have to sort of repeat yourself quite a lot as the CEO. We have to find different ways.
In what regard?
As in, you can't just rely on. Okay, so in a more traditional setup, if I wanted to call her like a all hands meeting, it's just easier to do.
Yes.
Whereas you have to sort of perhaps do town hall meetings where we use video conferences.
But no one takes any notice whether it's face to face or virtual. So
yeah, that's true. So I think just making sure that we communicate in different channels and perhaps repeating the message.
So it's the communication thing, really.
The communication is the main thing.
And what about? Because I've always thought it would work for senior staff, right?
Yeah.
But if it's a more junior person. But maybe it's all a bit different these days. But is that must still be a challenge, isn't it?
I had the same assumption as you, actually. I just thought, and we've got quite good age diversity in the agency, you know, sort of mid-20s right up to late 60s. There's a real range. I made an assumption that perhaps the sort of the Gen Y and Gen Z perhaps wouldn't want to join a team that is remote or virtual.
No.
But actually, that's not the case. The flexibility for people to be able to have several jobs at the same time, maybe like the portfolio career approach.
Yeah.
And it is an incredibly, it's a really sociable company. I think we've worked so hard on the culture that people do get to know each other. You could assume that virtual means you just don't know who you're working with, and it's not
like
that at
all. It's important to say, isn't it? You do meet up. Virtual doesn't mean you never see you.
Oh, no, not at all.
It just means you don't have to go to an office every day.
And actually, that's where a lot of the other investment is. So, you know, you save money, of course, on not having office costs, but we do have big meetups where we invest in training and fly people in and stay in hotels. And
I think that's key, isn't it? Especially for people who are earlier on in their career, you do need to, that's not right. It needs to, throughout your career, you need to feel that you're progressing and learning and the training and the mentorship that sometimes is formal and sometimes is informal that you get from having colleagues all over the place but what you're saying is that back to your point earlier, you can do that.
Yeah, so we invest in that time. But I think it's important to note that one of the downsides is this sort of sense of isolation and mental well-being.
Right.
So again, we've sort of been aware that we don't want people to feel isolated, so we do lots of these video calls. We have a well-being coordinator, and we at one point there was a woman doing yoga sessions online as well that you could you could basically have a little remote yoga session. So I'm
how do you do? Well, you have to,
as in, she was
kind
of
your laptop.
It's a bit like the Peloton,
floor, right?
We were sort of, the sort of Peloton approach, I suppose.
Right.
That she was talking you through how to do it, and everyone
work.
So I think we just focus on how to make people feel connected to their colleagues by using technology, and also, like, we set up a budget that if someone lives in Spain but is visiting San Francisco, if they meet another social element person, I pick up the food for coffee and food. The bill. I pick up the bill so that they can to try and inspire them to meet each other.
And do you have sort of hubs of people? I mean, I guess you do in London. Do you have hubs of people just sort of informally that it might just end up that you have quite a few people in different cities just because that's how it works?
Definitely. We've got a few, like a bit of a mini hub in Spain.
Right.
And Washington is a bit of a growing area for us in the US. So, yeah.
And they sort of meet up informally, formally, depending on what's going on.
Yes.
Okay. And how do you hire people? I mean,
I mean, other companies do this as well. It's video conferences. I mean, ideally, if someone is going to be working in the London office, or at least using that as a bit of a base, then obviously we will meet them face to face. But a lot of the hires we do is using video conferences, video calls, and we take our time. We do have that whole philosophy about you know, they might go through three stages of interviews because we want to get to know them, and they'll have chemistry meetings with different people.
Well, again, online.
All online,
I guess it's pretty important. If you're joining a virtual agency, you've got to be pretty relaxed in front of the camera and in front of the laptop, haven't you? Otherwise,
definitely.
It's probably not going to work.
Yeah.
And so have you hired people you've never met?
Yes.
Have you? That's cool.
I've kind of make it my mission to try and meet absolutely everybody, but there was this time where I remember going to one of the training sessions that we were running in New York, and I met one of my senior account managers, and it turned out that actually it'd been a whole year I'd never met him face to face, but I actually thought I had.
Yeah. And that happens to me all the time.
Yeah. And it was kind of like, I gave him like a massive hug, and it was just like, oh, how are you doing? And it is that thing, because we get to know each other using social channels and video, and we do tend to sort of follow each other on Facebook and that kind of stuff.
Right.
I genuinely thought I had, but he was like, nope, definitely not. So yeah, but that's kind of nice as well.
And so does it change the type of people you hire? I'm just trying to...
At the beginning, I would say there was definitely, you know, perhaps more mature people who had already worked at a big company and were very comfortable working from home. I think there's definitely no denying it that it's very popular for people who have either they're a carer or they parenting, or, you know, so there's childcare.
Yeah.
Being able to sort of juggle a little bit is very useful. So we do tend to attract self-starters, people who are very comfortable in that environment. At one point, I noticed perhaps there were quite a lot of introverted people, but we've kind of changed the balance on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a real diverse mix. But I think,
I presume it's not right for everyone. I mean, that's just the reality, isn't it? Frankly?
Yeah. And we've definitely had people who've come along and said, actually, do you know what? I really do want to go into an office.
Because it is hard. Because a lot of people think they can do it. But
yeah.
I mean, I'm a relatively extroverted character, but I've, you know, worked. Not alone, but, you know, we work virtually, and it does take a bit of doing. Do you know what I mean? It's not always... I mean, I'm up in London 3 days a week, so that's kind of my balance, but it's not...
Yeah.
You know, if I wasn't, I don't think... I couldn't do it 5 days a week, and some people could, but I wouldn't be for me. So it's quite a personal thing, isn't it?
Definitely. And, you know, I prefer the balance of going into an office. I also get to speak to a lot of clients, and so I can sort of socialise a lot. But, yeah, so
but
you
have
to...
But you don't have to spend 3 hours a day on the train. You know,
yeah.
That is the... You know, it does come with its benefits as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. Definitely.
Is the work different because you're not on the same room? I'm just trying to work out, you know, in terms of the output, you know, is it... Do you think you're doing... Is your business doing different type of work? You know, maybe you're a social agency and not a PR agency. I'm just... That's a pure hypothesis. I'm just trying to work that out. Is it different?
I think it's possible to do everything using the model that we've got.
Right.
And it lends itself very well for... things like, you know, we rely heavily on insights, and we've got an insights team, and they're based all over the place, and obviously they get together using virtual meetings. That's really useful for that whole time zones and follow the sun, so that we can have reports coming in the morning from different part of the world, which is amazing.
And what that's insights on basically social media channels, is it?
Consumer insights. So we would do, you know, we'll use tools like Brandwatch, whatever. So we've got a variety of different tools. We'd do insight on the brands, but we're also taking insight directly from the community managers as well, the engagement specialists, so that we're bringing that into the clients as well. So the bit that's been, do you know what, challenging and different, but I love a good challenge, the creative side. I think when you have strategists and creatives, it is quite useful to have some face-to-face time. So we're working around that, and that's the bit that we may end up having to sort of have more physical offices in New York or something like that. So that's been really interesting.
The creative bit of that.
But I don't know. I think we're nailing it, to be honest.
Right.
We are able to do everything using this model, and it's working.
And you know, on specific things, like how do you organise the account teams and stuff like that? How does that work?
So we have the commercial team, the senior account managers, account directors. We have then there's the services team. So they tend to work really closely together. So you get the account person and then someone focused on production and delivery, who's more of the day-to-day contact. And then there are other specialists. So we have strategists, designers, as I said, the engagement specialists. So there's a lot of engagement specialists on a project. So everything is divided up by the client, and then we experimented with pods, and then we kind of changed around a little bit. But it is well, essentially putting a selection of clients together. But actually, it's basically we've now split it by clients. So an account person will have a few different clients. But we did make the decision more recently, within the last year, to switch it out so that the US, North America, sorry, because it's North America including Canada. That's now its own territory, and EMEA, essentially sort of, Europe and the London clients are being run out of London, right. And I've got an MD in the States.
But in essence, there is a director on each account or something equivalent, and then there's an account director or an associate director in exactly the same way as there is in many normal inverted commas agencies.
Yeah.
And then you will have specialists, in effect, who are all over the
insights and strategy,
and they plug in as and when they're required to on those teams. So it's that same answer. You have structured it exactly the same.
Exactly the same. Yeah. And from the client's point of view, they wouldn't really notice a difference between
another
agency.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah. The clients know you're virtual, because why would you want to lie about it?
Yep.
But they're not paying less for you because you're virtual.
No.
You have to produce a competitive product, if you see what I mean. You're not saying, right, you get 20% off.
No, not at all. It's not a kind of value base like that. It's so they buy into the fact that we have a team that has cultural knowledge of their brand because they work in the same country, for example. So a lot of the time that when we work with, big brands like Mondelez is a client, for example, but they own like Oreo cookies, they own, lots of different biscuits and sweets. So we manage their tone of voice and speak back to consumers across something like 30 different countries in all of their socials. So that is very compelling to our clients, that they can have people, they can have a consistent approach to a sort of a global social strategy, and then we can execute it in different languages with people with cultural
and
knowledge.
And if they want to go into a country where you're not already there, you just go and find someone. You haven't
got
to fiddle about for 6 months getting an office, finding an MD, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so we can scale with them. But they also get the same, they have a lot of in-person contact from the account team. And yes, we do some sort of, video calls with our clients. And in America, they're really used to that because it's so big there.
Well, that's a good point, actually. We're in a false environment in London in that we all try and meet up or whatever.
Yeah.
But in so many other sectors, India, for example, there's 3-hour flight away, so you just don't do. Right, okay.
Yeah.
But it's important to say that they meet up with clients in the normal way, don't they?
Absolutely.
It's not like you're only having a virtual relationship with the client. The client meets up with the client with the agency team just as much, frankly, as a normal agency.
And also we do most of that in person. We like the team to go in and see the clients and just have status updates. Also, I'm such a fan of this. It's just that old school way of looking after your clients. We take them out for food and things like that. And we also have events.
Food?
I know. we have events. We have we're doing this thing called a leader's lunch where we invite our special clients to talk to each other and have a lunch. We have breakfast seminars. So we do quite a lot of events as well.
Right.
And
so it's kind of like you are aware of that face-to-face thing, and you create quite a few opportunities to meet face-to-face, both internally and externally, as it makes sense, doesn't it?
It's kind of part of our DNA. It's how we do business. And we have, everyone is on retainer, and loads of them have been with us for years. So
on the freelancer side?
No, I mean the clients.
Right. Yeah,
so, gotcha. We invest in those relationships, and it's really important.
Just tell me about the US, because that's really interesting. pretty much even between the US and the UK and Europe?
Or it's probably about 60% of the revenue comes from the US, and we anticipate that to probably go to more like 70-30 at some point.
Because when you set up, I'm trying to get back now, when it was in
2002, yeah.
It was UK business then, right?
I set it up as a global business from the beginning, I was in London.
In terms of the clients you had, it was predominantly UK. So I'm just intrigued, when did it all happen, the US bit? Go on.
So actually it started off, my very, very first client was Butlins, but that was for interactive text-to-screen project. It was kind of a very experimental project. So in many ways, I kind of don't count that one. So the next clients were Chevron in the US,
right.
GE in the US, and then Disney in the US.
So that's not just your first client. That's your first US clients or your first clients?
First client. So it was okay, Butlins, so which I'm discounting.
From
and
the get-go,
it was US.
Okay.
And the reason being is that the user-generated content, again, sort of going back in time. So when I started, there was no Facebook or YouTube or Twitter, but then things started to shift.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. And all of these new channels were coming out, and they were being used for marketing. But before that, there was this boom with user-generated content and microsites,
yep,
and advertising, and they needed the content to be moderated. So there was a bit of a sort of a heyday for us when we were doing moderation of content for user-generated content campaigns.
And you, for whatever reason, you did that quite early in the piece and won some US clients off the back.
Yes, and a lot of it was down to Google and just our website and having good search times, because we were specialists.
You knew anyone in America, but
there was one point where I think there was only like three companies doing what we were doing.
Wow,
we were specialists.
I wish I'd had that idea. And now it's great. And basically, the model's the same in the US as it is in the UK.
Terms. So it's
bigger budgets.
I guess the only difference is that there's the language implications in Europe. So we often do multiple languages for our brands. We do that in the US as well, but it tends to be engagement, creative work, insights,
and
strategy.
And you share a bunch of clients between the US and UK and all that.
So the US now focuses on the US clients so they can really grow that. So that was the shift that we did. Everything was always global. Now we're actually having the US run with its own P&L. And I've got an amazing MD, Ashley Cooksley, who heads up the US, essentially. So so we're doing it slightly
differently. But you've been there forever.
Started
business
there.
Right.
And it was kind of quite sweet, because there was a time where I just thought it was normal that all of the leads were just coming in. It was all inbound leads for years. And it would just be like, I'd pick up the phone and be like, yes, of course, I can help you. All these brands were just calling, which I now know is completely crazy. And I was very, very lucky.
But they found you on reputation or you had
word
a good
of mouth and
or
Google. And I think it was different because,
but there's loads of I don't mean this rudely,
yeah,
but there's
yeah.
a lot of social agencies out there. I'm not sure you guys are doing a very good job, but it seems surprising that you would get, why would they call you above everyone else?
Well,
unless they knew you, of course.
I think it was because at the time we were perhaps more supplier rather than a consultancy. So now we've spent a lot of time reinventing ourselves as we're consultancy led. It's a strategic agency where we do strategy, insight, creative, etc. When we started and the company was called eModeration, it was more of a moderation and community management
Customer service type element.
So I think it did mean that people they know exactly what they want. They pick up the phone, they emailed, off we go. Now it's very different. It's kind of longer term relationships, and we're doing very different things to what we did then.
Just on a customer service one, because that's an area that sort of touches public relations and all that sort of stuff. But where are we on that now? On any sizable business and therefore brand, you have to use a bot, don't you? Because you just cannot cope with the number of inquiries that are coming in with people. But if you use a bot, then quite often the customer experience isn't great. So I can sort of see both sides of that argument, and I struggle to work out a solution. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we've been through that whole journey, really. Right. I think the angle that we have now, because it's that whole helping brands be more human, essentially, we recommend that they have filters, and there are some great tools that can, you know, cut out stuff that so it never sees the light of day, for example. But we do tend to focus on the human side of it's an opportunity for a brand to have a really great conversation with the consumer. And maybe that's because they're having a problem and therefore you're helping them. Maybe you're promoting some great, you know, marketing content and it's really funny or something. And maybe there's a crisis going on, in which case you have to react and be very, you know, have a lot of empathy and you know, protect the brand, but also do the right thing. So the way I see it is that at any one point, we're customer service, we're marketing, and we're PR. It's right. Just that we don't call ourselves a PR agency. It's much more around communications. I have had a sort of running joke where people say, you're a PR agency, but I don't think we are. We're a bit of...
No, you're a bit of... You're a social agency.
Social agency, yeah.
But the... So how does... I'm just trying to work, because it's a personal of interest thing, really. The customer service... So let's leave names out of it. I'm a bank.
Yeah.
So I have I have people moaning on Twitter. I have people moaning on my own website. I have people ringing up moaning. Facebook, Instagram, I don't know. So what do you do? Do you have a bot for each channel? How does it, where do you start?
So for some clients, we are actually doing all of the customer service. We respond back
as a person,
As a sort of one-to-one, so all right. Yeah, people, right. Basically.
Which you're quite well positioned to do, because you can have people in all time zones and all of us.
Definitely. What's happened over the years is a lot of people have taken that maybe in-house or using a BPO or customer service company to get through the sheer scale, but they still want us to perhaps do more proactive engagement. So instead of doing all of it, we would just spot opportunities to connect with someone, maybe because they've actually just said something about the brand and therefore we want to connect. So it does vary. So sometimes we're doing...
So there's a multi-layer approach depending on the client and what you do, what they want you to do. So on bots then, what was your conclusion on that? That they don't really work? Is that kind of what you're...
No, I think we are very pro-technology helping a brand do great things. Now, sometimes that's using filters.
Right.
Sometimes, yes, they do bots for more of like the transactional stuff.
Right.
We also can help advise on the tone of voice for a bot, but we've stepped away from it, and basically we're more about actually having that human bit, because that's what the brands seem to want us to do.
Right. And just finally, how much of your week is spent on video calls then? It seemed to me that it must be a fair few hours.
Yeah. It's probably about a third of my week, actually. It's quite funny.
Wow.
I think because my exec team, they are based in London, Aberdeen, Valencia, and North Carolina.
Right.
So we have to have video calls. So
what's your office look like? Have you got a nice camera? Have you that you can? Is it pretty technical? You've got all the gadgets, I imagine, right?
It's all about the Wi-Fi.
Right.
As long as you've got good Wi-Fi, you can have a good video call. I've just got used to that's the way we work.
Right.
We still use a lot of chat, so if I'm on the go, I'll be sort of sending messages to my exec team. But I'm also in the office maybe 3 or 4 days a week, that kind of thing. So I get to sort of see people in person as well.
Right.
But yeah, I've just, it feels so normal that it just doesn't occur to me
that's the nice thing about it, isn't
it?
Brilliant. Tamara, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.